On the bridge of the Starship Enterprise, Mr. Sulu is at the helm, and Mr. Spock is in command.
1 degree to overlap. Stand by to photograph.
Bailey, sitting next to Sulu at the navigator's station, moves his finger over a button.
Now!
Spock watches on the view screen above his station. Bailey comes over to him with a report.
3 days of this now, sir. Other ships must have made star maps of some of this.
Negative, Lieutenant. We're the first to reach this far.
On the con, a red light flashes.
Sir, contact with an object. It's moving toward us.
No visual contact yet.
Deflectors, full intensity.
It's coming at light speed.
Collision course.
Evasive maneuvers, Mr. Sulu.
Object changing direction too, sir. Keeps coming at us.
Lieutenant Uhura.
I'm getting no signal from it, sir.
Still collision course. Deflectors aren't stopping. Sound alarm.
It's slowing down, Mr. Spock.
Countermand alarm. All engines full stop. Visual contact.
An object comes into view, growing rapidly larger. Spock's slanting black Vulcan eyebrows, which naturally give his face a quizzical frown, knit even further as he stares at the main view screen. The object is a revolving cube, whose various faces, red, orange, blue, and white, glow as they slowly pirouette. Everyone watches the screen warily.
Ahead slow. Steer a course around it, Mr. Sulu.
The cube moves to one side of the screen and disappears from view as the Enterprise maneuvers around it. Sulu nudges the ship forward, but the cube slides back across the view screen and takes up a position in front of the starship.
It's blocking the way.
Quite unnecessary to raise your voice, Mr. Bailey. All engines stop. Sound the alert.
Bridge to all decks. Condition alert. All decks. Condition alert. Captain Kirk to the bridge.
Space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry. Starring William Shatner, also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock. The Corbomite Maneuver. The cube hovers in front of the stationary Federation starship, blocking its path.
Captain's log, stardate 1512.2. On our third day of star mapping, an unexplained cubical object blocked our vessel's path. On the bridge, Mr. Spock immediately ordered general alert. My location, sick bay. Quarterly physical check.
Just a few seconds more.
Just a few seconds more.
Seconds more.
Kirk lies on his back, his legs pumping a treadmill.
That's the boy. Keep it up. Work up a little sweat. Do you good.
McCoy glances over his shoulder at the flashing red alert light above his door, then looks at the biomonitor screen.
You're killing me.
McCoy glances at the red light again.
Stop.
Kirk sits up.
Winded?
He'd be the last one I'd tell.
He sees the light above the door flashing red and throws McCoy a look before grabbing a towel and switching on the view screen on McCoy's desk.
Kirk here, what's going on?
Have a look at this, Captain.
Spock's face disappears and is replaced by the forward view of the glowing, rotating cube.
What's that?
Undetermined. Whatever it is, it's blocking our way. When we move, it moves as well.
Vessel of some kind?
Negative. More some type of device.
Well, you're right up. You can see the alarm lights flashing from there, McCoy. Why didn't you tell me?
Finally finished physical on you, didn't I? What am I, a doctor or a moon shuttle conductor? I jumped every time a light came on around here. I'd end up talking to myself.
All decks alert. All decks alert.
Crew hurry to their stations. Kirk, bare-chested, his uniform top slung around his shoulders, steps into a turbo lift.
Bridge.
He opens an intercom channel.
Captain to Bridge.
Spock here.
Any changes?
Negative. Whatever it is, it seems to want to just hold us here.
Any indication of danger from it?
Negative.
I'll change first, then. Captain out.
All decks have reported green, Mr. Bailey.
Yes, sir.
And when the captain arrives, he'll expect the full report.
The cube's range and position, I'll have it by then. Raising my voice back there doesn't mean I was scared. I couldn't do my job. It means I happen to have a human thing called an adrenaline gland.
Mm-hmm. Does sound most inconvenient, however. Have you considered having it removed?
Sulu grins.
Very funny.
Try to cross brains with Spock. They cut you to pieces every time.
Kirk changes his shirt.
Captain to Bridge.
Spock here.
Any signs of life?
Negative.
Have you tried all hailing frequencies?
Affirmative. No answer from the cube.
Have the department heads meet me on the bridge.
Already standing by.
Kirk steps out of his quarters. Stationary in space, the Enterprise dwarfs the glowing, revolving cube that nonetheless blocks its path. The captain arrives on the bridge. He steps across to Spock's station on the upper gallery.
Reporting, sir. Sensors show it as solid, but its composition is unknown to us.
Lieutenant Uhura?
Hailing frequency still open, sir. I get no message from it.
Kirk steps down into the well past the captain's chair to Bailey at the navigator's station.
Navigation.
Distance from us. 1,593 meters, position constant.
Each of its edges measures 107 meters. Mass, a little under 11,000 metric tons.
Scully.
Motive power? Beats me what makes it go.
I'll buy speculation.
I'd sell it if I had any. That's a solid cube. How something like that can sense us coming, block us, move when we move, it beats me. That's my report.
Life sciences.
Same report.
Sir, are we going to just let it hold us here? We've got phaser weapons. I vote we blast it.
I'll keep that in mind, Mr. Bailey. When this becomes a democracy.
Kirk smiles wryly to himself. Later, the department heads meet in the main briefing room.
Captain's log, stardate 1513.8. Star maps reveal no indication of habitable planets nearby. Origin and purpose of the cube still unknown. We've been here, held motionless for 18 hours.
Anything further, gentlemen?
I believe it adds up to either one of two possibilities. First, a space buoy of some kind.
Second,
flypaper.
And you don't recommend sticking around?
Negative. It would make us appear too weak.
It's time for action, gentlemen. Mr. Bailey.
Reach the phaser gun, crew.
Calamad. I'll select what kind of action, Mr. Bailey.
I'm sorry, sir. I thought you meant...
Explaining, Mr. Bailey. I haven't requested an explanation. Now, as I was about to say, Navigator, plot us a spiral course away from the cube.
Yes, sir.
We'll try pulling away from it.
Yes, sir.
Helmsman's engine room. Stand by. All decks alert. We're going to try pulling away.
The meeting breaks up. On the bridge, Sulu and Bailey are in position at the con. Behind them, Kirk sits in the captain's chair.
Was plotted and laid in, sir.
Engage, Mr. Sulu, quarter speed. 0.25, sir.
Scotty watches from the upper level as Sulu edges the ship forward.
Still blocking us, sir.
Let's see if it'll give way. Ahead, half speed.
0.50, sir.
In the forward view screen, the cube shifts momentarily, then slides back into position, directly in front of the vessel. Bailey glances apprehensively at the red alert light on the con as it starts flashing. Kirk turns to Spock.
Radiation from the short end of the spectrum increasing.
I'll stop, hold position.
Sulu brings the Enterprise to a standstill. Bailey anxiously checks the readings from the navigation console.
It's still coming toward us. Range 190 meters.
Kirk throws a shrewd, appraising glance at the navigator. Spock calls down from his position at the science station.
Radiation increasing.
Power astern, half speed.
Half speed.
The image of the cube in the screen starts to become fuzzy.
Radiation nearing the tolerance level.
Still coming. Gaining on us.
Engines astern, full speed.
Full speed.
The blurred image of the cube keeps position relative to the retreating vessel. Its rate of rotation increases. Bailey, his features contorted with stress, shields his eyes as he looks at the screen.
Range 125 meters now.
He glances back at the captain. Kirk watches him carefully.
Helm, give us warp speed.
Warp one, sir.
Radiation at the tolerance level.
Warp two, sir.
The cube, still holding station, moves slowly closer.
He is now warp three.
Radiation passing the tolerance level, entering lethal zone.
Range 51 meters and still closing, sir.
Phaser crew, stand ready.
Phaser crew reports ready, sir.
The spinning, glowing cube moves closer until it fills the whole screen.
Seconds of this, one phase is on target.
Bailey doesn't react.
Mr. Bailey, lock phases.
Phases locked. On target, sir. Point blank range closing.
Fire main phases.
Two beams of red light shoot out from the phaser banks at the bottom of the Enterprise's saucer-shaped main hull. The view screen turns blinding white and the vessel rocks violently, almost throwing the crew from their seats.
Stardate 1514.0. The cube has been destroyed. Ship's damage, minor. But my next decision, Major, probe on ahead or turn back.
Nothing, Captain. No contacts, no objects in any direction.
Care to speculate on what we'll find if we go on ahead?
Speculate? No. Logically, we'll discover the intelligence which sent out the cube.
Intelligence different from ours or superior?
Probably both. And if you're asking the logical decision to make...
No, I'm not.
The mission of the Enterprise is to seek out and contact alien life.
Has it occurred to you that there's a certain inefficiency in constantly questioning me on things you've already made up your mind about?
It gives me emotional security.
Spock's eyes slide noncommittally away.
Navigator, set a course ahead.
Plotted. Lane in, sir.
McCoy arrives.
Engaged. Warp one, sir.
Mr. Bailey, phaser crews were sluggish. He was slow in locking them into your directional beat. Helmsman, engineering decks could have been faster, too. Program a series of simulated attacks and evasion maneuvers. Keep repeating the exercise until we're proficient, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
Your timing is lousy, James.
They get into the lift.
Men are tired.
Captain's quarters. Aren't you the one that always says a little suffering is good for the soul?
I never said that.
This is the bridge. Prepare for simulated attack.
I'm especially worried about Bailey. Navigator's position's rough enough. Seasoned man.
I think he'll cut it.
How so sure? Because you spotted something you liked in him? Something familiar, like yourself, say about 11 years ago?
On the double, Deck 5. Give me a green light.
My doctor... You've been reading your textbooks again?
I don't need textbooks to know that you could have promoted him too fast. Listen to that voice.
Condition alert. Battle stations.
They step out of the lift and go to Kirk's quarters. McCoy pours two drinks, hands one to Kirk, slumped at his desk, and sits opposite him.
Engineering Deck 5, report. Phaser crews, come on, let's get with it. Phaser Station 2, where's your green light?
What's next? They're not machines, Jim?
Oh, they're not.
After what they've been through, they really should...
Dr. McCoy, I've heard you say that man is ultimately superior to any mechanical device.
No, I never say that either.
I could have sworn I heard you say that.
Kirk turns on his view screen.
Kirk here.
Exercise rating, Captain. 94%.
Let's try for 100, Mr. Spock.
Agreed.
Kirk throws a challenging look at McCoy.
What are you going to do with that 6% when they give it to you, Jim?
I'm going to take it. And I'm going to...
Excuse me, sir. It's past time you had something to eat.
Yeoman Janice Rand lays a cloth and a tray on the desk in front of Kirk.
What the devil is this? Green leaves?
It's dietary salad, sir. Dr. McCoy ordered your diet card changed. I thought you knew.
Your weight was up a couple of pounds, remember?
Will you stop hovering over me, yeoman?
Well, I'll change it if you don't like it, sir.
Bring some for the doctor, too.
No. No, I never eat until the crew eats.
Thank you, yeoman.
You're welcome, sir.
This is the bridge. All decks prepare to better reaction time on second simulated attack.
When I get my hands on the headquarters genius that assigned me a female yeoman...
What's the matter, Jim? Don't you trust yourself?
Kirk looks askance at McCoy.
Engineering decks alert.
I've already got a female to worry about. Her name's the Enterprise.
Engineering decks alert. Phaser crews, let's...
Countermand that. All decks to battle stations. This is not a drill. Repeat, this is not a drill.
Kirk here.
We're picking up an object, sir. Much larger, coming toward us.
Coming.
He hurries to the bridge.
Exceptionally strong contact. Not visual yet.
Bailey and Sulu at the con search the large forward view screen for any sign of life.
Distance spectrograph. Metallic, similar to cube. Much greater energy reading.
There, sir.
In the center of the screen, a spherical object comes into view, growing rapidly larger as it approaches the Enterprise.
Half speed. Prepare for evasive action.
Do you think you ought to, sir?
The ship rocks.
Tractor beam, Captain. Something's grabbed us. Hard.
Engines overloading, sir.
All engines stop. All engines stop.
Phaser crew, stand ready.
Bridge to phaser crew, stand ready.
Forward phaser, will comply. All weapons at operational ready.
As the vessel draws closer, its enormous size becomes apparent. The whole surface of the sphere is covered with a web of smaller spheres, each one as large as a small spaceship. They pulse with light in a complex sequence that makes patterns ripple across the surface of the vessel. The bridge crew look on with awe.
Fascinating.
What's its mass, Mr. Spock?
Reading goes off my scale, Captain. Must be a mile in diameter.
Over 5,000 meters away and it still fills the screen.
Reduce image, let me see all of it.
Bailey doesn't react.
Magnification 2.5, sir. Magnification 1.8.5, sir.
Even at reduced magnification, the object fills the screen, more like a small planet than a spaceship. The crew gaze at it. Bailey seems almost hypnotized by the vessel's throbbing lights.
Ship to ship.
Hailing frequencies open, sir.
This is the United Earthship Enterprise. We convey greetings and await your reply.
There's no response. At the con, Bailey, the tall, fair-haired lieutenant sitting at the navigator's console alongside Sulu at the helm, suddenly frowns and raises a hand towards his earpiece, listening intently.
What is it, Mr. Bailey?
A message coming over my navigation beam.
Pick it up.
Switching, sir.
And trespassed into our star systems. This is Baylock, commander of the flagship Vesarius of the First Federation. Your vessel, obviously the product of a primitive and savage civilization, having ignored a warning buoy and having then destroyed it, has demonstrated your intention is not peaceful. We are now considering the disposition of your ship and the life aboard.
Ship to ship.
Hailing frequencies open, sir.
This is the captain of the Enterprise speaking. The warning nature of your space buoy was unknown to us. Our vessel was blocked, and when we attempted to disengage...
Bailey grimaces and pulls out his earpiece. Everyone looks at their consoles.
Captain, we're being invaded by exceptionally strong sensor probes everywhere. Our electrical systems, our engines...
No further communication will be accepted. If there is the slightest hostile move, your vessel will be destroyed immediately.
Bailey glances round anxiously at Kirk. The captain gets up from his chair and leans against the gallery rail, stroking his chin thoughtfully.
Shutting off some of our systems, Captain. Brilliant. Extremely sophisticated in their methods.
Does our recorder marker have all this on its tapes?
Enough to warn other Earth ships.
Mr. Bailey, dispatch recorder marker.
Sulu glances across at the navigator. Bailey is gazing at the view screen, oblivious to anyone around him.
Mr. Bailey?
Recorder marker dispatched.
Marker on course, heading back the way we came.
The ship rocks violently.
Your recorder marker has been destroyed. You have been examined. Your ship must be destroyed. We make assumption you have a deity, or deities, or some such beliefs which comfort you. We therefore grant you 10 Earth time periods, known as minutes, to make preparations.
Spock turns back to his console and makes adjustments.
Might be interesting to see what they look like if I can locate where that voice is coming from.
McCoy, arriving with Scotty in the lift, looks at the huge vessel in the view screen and goes over to Kirk.
Alec's message, it was heard all over the ship.
Kirk nods, goes back to the captain's chair, and opens a communications channel.
Captain to crew, those of you who have served for long on this vessel have encountered alien life forms. You know the greatest danger facing us is ourselves, an irrational fear of the unknown. But there's no such thing as the unknown. Only things temporarily hidden, temporarily not understood. In most cases, we have found that intelligence capable of a civilization, is capable of understanding peaceful gestures. Surely a life form advanced enough for space travel is advanced enough to eventually understand our motives. All decks, stand by. Captain out. Ship to ship.
Hailing frequencies open, sir.
This is the captain of the USS Enterprise. We came seeking friendship, but we have no wish to trespass. To demonstrate our goodwill, our vessel will now return the way it came.
He looks around for the source of the sound. Lieutenant Uhura snatches out her earpiece. Kirk gives an order to the navigator. He doesn't react, and Sulu has to reach across and do it for him.
Lay in a course ahead, Mr. Bailey.
What? Of course.
Lauded and laid in, sir.
Engage. Warp factor one.
Warp factor. There's no response. Switch to impulse. All engine systems show dead, and weapon systems.
Switching to screen, I believe I can get something visual.
Everyone looks at the main view screen. The image of the enormous spherical vessel is replaced by a gaunt, elongated alien head with a huge, bald brain case, angry yellow reptilian eyes, green skin, and a sour, downturned mouth. The image slowly ripples and distorts as though seen through lapping water. The creature's appearance shakes everybody. Kirk sinks back into his chair, pondering.
I was curious to see how they appeared.
Yes, of course you were.
I don't understand this. Spock's wasting time. Everybody else just sitting around. Somebody's got to do something.
See,
what do they want from us? Let's find out what they want us
they
to
want
do.
They want us to lose our heads,
We've
Bailey,
only
now.
Got 8 minutes left.
7 minutes and 41 seconds.
He's doing a countdown.
Practically end of watch.
What are you all out of your minds? End of watch? It's the end of everything. What are you, robots? Wound up toy soldiers? Don't you know when you're dying? Watch and regulations and orders. What do they mean?
Bailey, you're relieved. Escort him to his quarters, Doctor.
Bailey's head sinks onto his chest. His breath comes in panicky gasps. McCoy comes over and puts a hand on his arm. The navigator looks up sharply.
Let's go.
Bailey strides up to the lift, with the doctor following. Kirk turns to Uhura.
Ship to ship.
Hailing frequencies open, sir.
This is the captain of the Enterprise speaking. It is the custom of Earth people to try and avoid misunderstanding whenever possible. We destroyed your space buoy as a simple act of self-preservation. When we attempted to move away from it, it emitted radiation harmful to our species. If you've examined our ship and its tapes, you know this to be true.
The bridge crew look around anxiously at the noise. The figure on the screen stares implacably.
You now have 7 minutes left.
Kirk looks back with angry, narrowed eyes at the figure on the screen. On the bridge of the Starship Enterprise.
4 minutes, 30 seconds.
You have an annoying fascination for timepieces, Mr. Sulu.
Captain Kirk paces the upper level of the bridge. His steps bring him level with Spock.
Jim.
4 minutes.
What's the matter with him out there? They must know we mean them no harm.
Certainly aware by now that we're totally incapable of it.
There must be something to do. Something I've overlooked.
Chess. When one is outmatched, the game is over. Checkmate.
Is that your best recommendation?
I regret that I can find no other logical alternative.
He turns and walks away from his science officer. McCoy comes onto the bridge.
Assuming we get out of this, Captain.
Nobody's given up yet.
Kirk resumes the captain's chair.
Well, then about Bailey. Let me enter it in my medical records as some fatigue.
That's my decision, Doctor.
And it was your mistake. You overworked him, pushed him, expected too much out of him.
I'm ordering you to drop it. No time for you, your theories, your quaint philosophies.
I intend to challenge your actions and my medical records. I'll state that I warned you about Bailey's condition. Now that's no bluff.
Anytime you can bluff me, Doctor!
Everyone turns and stares.
3 minutes.
Kirk sucks in his bottom lip.
All right, Doctor. Let's hope we have time to argue about it.
McCoy starts to leave. Kirk suddenly looks over to Scotty and Spock, the glint of an idea in his eyes.
Not chess, Mr. Spock.
He looks shrewdly at the alien vessel.
Poker. Do you know the game?
He turns to Uhura.
Ship to ship.
Hailing frequencies open, sir.
This is the captain of the Enterprise. Our respect for other life forms requires that we give you this warning. There's one critical item of information that has never been incorporated into the memory banks of any Earth ship. Since the early years of space exploration, Earth vessels have had incorporated into them a substance known as corbomite. It is a material and a device which prevents attack on us. If any destructive energy touches our vessel, a reverse reaction of equal strength is created, destroying...
You now have 2 minutes.
Destroying the attacker. It may interest you to know that since the initial use of corbomite more than two of our centuries ago, no attacking vessel has survived the attempt. Death has little meaning to us. If it has none to you, then attack us now. We grow annoyed at your foolishness.
He gestures to Lieutenant Uhura to cut the channel. Everyone waits, watching the spherical vessel on the forward view screen. Spock comes to stand beside the captain's chair. He shakes his head. Kirk smiles ruefully.
However, it was well played.
Spock folds his arms.
I regret not having learned more about this Balak. In some manner, he was reminiscent of my father.
Then may heaven have helped your mother.
Quite the contrary. She considered herself a very fortunate Earthwoman.
Scotty smiles. McCoy comes to stand behind Kirk.
Doc. Sorry.
Oh, having other things on your mind? My fault. I don't know how in the devil you kept from punching me in the face.
Sulu looks down at the chronometer display.
1 minute. I knew he would.
Lieutenant Uhura, the black communications officer, gets up from her chair and stands along with the others, looking towards the screen. Bailey steps back out of the lift onto the bridge. Everyone turns to look at him. Kirk glances at McCoy. Sulu.
If anyone's interested, 30 seconds.
Request permission to return to post, sir.
A grim smile lifts the corner of McCoy's mouth.
Permission granted.
Bailey steps down to the lower level and goes back to the navigator's seat beside Sulu at the comm.
Ten seconds. Nine. Eight. Seven. Six. Five. Four. Three. Two. One.
They all stare at the screen. Lieutenant Uhura clasps her hands together. Scotty wipes the back of his hand across his mouth. Nothing happens. Bailey, sitting in the navigator's chair, eyes screwed shut, opens them again. With a look of profound relief, Kirk exhales and takes a deep breath. Spock unfolds his arms.
A very interesting game, this poker.
It does have advantages over chess.
Love to teach it to you.
This is the commander of the Viserys.
Here it comes. Is it raise or call?
The destruction of your vessel has been delayed. We will relent in your destruction only if we have proof of your Corbomite device.
Hold on that. Let him sweat for a change.
Sulu glances over his shoulder at his captain with a knowing grin.
Ship to ship.
Hailing frequency, sir.
Request denied.
I have visual contact, Captain.
The gaunt green head appears on the screen again, the image still distorted by the strange rippling effect. Its yellow eyes stare unblinking.
We will soon inform you of our decision regarding your vessel. And having permitted your primitive efforts to see my form, I trust it has pleased your curiosity. And now, another demonstration of our superiority.
Baylock's image vanishes. Kirk turns to Spock, who checks the readings at his console. Yeoman Rand comes onto the bridge with coffee.
I thought the power was off in the galley.
I used a hand phaser and zap, hot coffee.
Sulu looks at the screen. Something is happening to the alien vessel.
Something's going on, Captain.
A cluster made of half a dozen of the smaller spheres has broken off the main sphere and is heading towards the ship.
It's a small ship.
About 2,000 metric tons.
It has been decided that I will conduct you to a planet of the First Federation which is capable of sustaining your life form. There you will disembark and be interned. Your ship will be destroyed, of course.
Engine systems coming on, Captain.
Do not be deceived by the size of this pilot vessel. It has an equal potential to destroy your vessel.
Tractor beam again.
So that you may sustain your gravity and atmosphere. atmosphere. Your systems are now open. Escape is impossible, since you are being taken under our power to your destination. Any move to escape or destroy this ship will result in the instant destruction of the Enterprise and everyone aboard.
We're being told, sir.
Glowing orange and yellow, the pilot ship, a cluster of half a dozen spheres, takes up station ahead of the Enterprise and tows it. On the bridge, all the crew can do is watch, tension etched into their faces. In the captain's chair, hiding his reaction from the others, Kirk swallows apprehensively.
Captain's log, stardate 1514.1. The Enterprise is in tow. To this point, no resistance has been offered. My plan? A show of resignation. Baylock's tractor beam has to be a heavy drain of power on a small ship. Question, will he grow careless?
Captain, he's pulling out a little ahead of us.
He sneaked power down a bit.
Kirk and Spock step down into the well of the bridge.
Our speed is down to 0.64 of light.
I want a right angle course, sheer away from him, no matter which way he turns.
Yes, sir.
Maximum acceleration when I give the word.
Yes, sir.
From the captain's chair, Kirk looks at the smaller vessel in the view screen ahead. At the helm, Sulu's eyes shine at the prospect of the challenge. Bailey looks on in suspense.
Engage.
Sulu engages the engines and the Enterprise starts to drag against the smaller pilot vessel. Kirk watches the view screen for any sign of a change in the alien ship. Sulu glances down at the coolant temperature display for the primary manifolds. The temperatures are climbing sharply.
It's a strain, Captain. Engines are overloading. More power.
We're superheating. Intermix temperature 7,400 degrees. 7.5. 7.6. 8,000 degrees.
Captain Kirk watches the vessel intently. The yellow lights from its glowing spheres is taking on a pinkish hue. The Enterprise starts to shake under the strain. In the main hull, the crew struggle to keep their feet in the corridors. The glow from the spheres of the smaller vessel is getting brighter, their outline more fuzzy and indistinct. Below decks, people are thrown to the other side of the corridor. On the bridge, the crew hang onto their consoles or the arms of their chairs as the turbulence increases. Kirk calls out to the con.
Sheer away, Mr. Bailey.
Bailey initiates the maneuver. Ahead, the pilot ship glows brilliant white. The bridge starts to tilt at a crazy angle as the Enterprise tries to bank away.
2,000 degrees above maximum. 8.4. 8.5. 8.6. She'll blow soon.
Now, Mr. Sulu, impulse power 2.
Sulu adds in the impulse engines. The ship bucks violently.
We're breaking free, sir!
The Enterprise shears away. The spheres of the pilot vessel collapse to a dull red glow.
Stop, sir. Engines need work badly, Captain. Can you hold it here a few hours?
That may not be wise. If you got a signal through to the mothership.
Then we're not home yet.
A signal, Captain. It's very weak. It's Balak. It's a distress signal to the Phasarius. His engines are out. His life-sustaining system isn't operating. The message is repeating, sir.
Any reply?
Negative. His signal is growing weak. Sir, I doubt if the mothership could have heard it.
Plot a course for it, Mr. Bailey.
Spock turns.
For it, Captain.
Dead ahead.
At the con, Bailey and Sulu exchange a glance. Kirk goes to his chair and opens an intercom channel.
This is the captain speaking. First Federation vessel is in distress. We're preparing to board it. There are lives at stake. By our standards, alien life, but lives nevertheless. Captain out.
Course plotted and laid in, sir.
Mr. Scott, ready the transporter room.
Aye, sir.
Mr. Sulu, bring us to within 100 meters. Ahead slow.
Ahead slow, sir.
McCoy comes to Kirk's side.
Jim, don't you think...
What's the mission of this vessel, Doctor? To seek out and contact alien life. And an opportunity to demonstrate what our high-sounding words mean. Any questions? I'll take two men with me. Dr. McCoy, to examine and treat the aliens if necessary. And you, Mr. Bailey.
Bailey looks up in surprise.
Sir?
The face of the unknown. I think I owe you a look at it.
Yes, sir.
Captain, request permission to...
Denied. If I'm wrong. If it's a trap, I want you here.
Kirk, McCoy, and Bailey leave. They come into the transporter room.
Transporter ready?
Well, yes, sir, but it's risky. We're locked in what appears to be a main deck.
Air sample?
Breathable. In fact, a slightly higher oxygen content than our own. Communicator.
Good.
Phaser weapon.
Thank you, Scotty. Ready, Doctor?
No, but you won't let that stop you.
Bend low, gentlemen. It reads pretty cramped over there.
The three men stoop.
Ready to transport.
Energize.
They disappear. And reappear in a low alcove on the pilot vessel. As McCoy straightens up, he bumps his head. Kirk leads him and Bailey through a low door. He draws his phaser. Ahead of them is the gaunt alien figure. It's about 4 foot tall, and obviously a lifeless mannequin. Nonetheless, Kirk approaches it cautiously.
It's a dummy. Puppet of some kind.
I'm Balak. Welcome aboard.
They look around. A sheer curtain draws back, revealing a childlike figure, small, bald, and gap-toothed, reclining on cushions in a divan. At his side is a bulbous control column set with lights. Kirk leads the others into the cramped chamber, where there are several small upholstered chairs against the walls.
I'm Captain Kirk.
And McCoy and Bailey. Sit. Be comfortable.
They glance around at the chairs.
Go ahead. Be seated.
Some drapes part, and a tray slides out with a bowl of drink, four glasses, and a ladle.
We must drink. This is Tranya. I hope you relish it as much as I.
Balak hands each of them a glass. They take them warily.
Commander Balak.
I know. A thousand questions.
But first, the Tranya.
Kirk raises his glass and looks at its orange-brown contents uneasily. Baylock watches and turns to McCoy and Bailey, who are equally reluctant.
Gentlemen.
He raises his own glass and drinks. Kirk takes a sip and raises his eyebrows, pleasantly surprised. Bailey and McCoy follow suit.
Commander, that puppet, my alter ego, so to speak. In your culture, he would be Mr. Hyde to my Jekyll. You must admit he's effective. You would never have been frightened by me. And I thought my distress signal quite clever. It was a pleasure testing you.
Testing us? I see.
I had to discover your real intentions.
But you probed our memory banks.
Your records could have been a deception on your part.
And your crew?
I have no crew, Doctor. I run everything. This entire complex from this small ship. But I miss company, conversation. Even an alien would be welcome. Perhaps one of your men, for some period of time. An exchange of information, cultures.
Yes, both our cultures would benefit.
Kirk looks at Bailey, who grins.
Do you know where we can find a volunteer, Mr. Bailey?
Me, sir, I'd like to volunteer.
Ah, you represent Earth's best, then.
No, sir, I'm not. I'll make plenty of mistakes.
But you'd find out more about us that way. And I'd get a better officer in return.
I see. We think much alike, Captain, you and I.
He takes Kirk's hand.
Now, before I bring back the Fusarius, let me show you my vessel. It is not often I have this pleasure.
They go.
Yes, we're very much alike, Captain. Both proud of our ships.
Holding on to Kirk and McCoy like a toddler holding on to its parents, Baylock leads them away. This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.